A conversation on race in Connecticut. Lisa Wexler talks to Bridgeport civic activist Wayne Winston. Now, on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600.
And welcome back to the show. Wayne, did you just hear Pastor William McCullough? He basically said we got to get a petition going.
Absolutely. And I was laughing. I talked to him earlier this morning, and I'm saying, he has no idea you're going to put him to work. And I said, that's okay, because he doesn't mind doing the work. And it's so important that our community understand, and that's what I really enjoy about you, Lisa. Some things are beyond color. Some things are just about doing the right thing. And Pastor McCullough is also the president of the IMA, the Interdenominational Ministers Alliance in Bridgeport, which has a huge number of churches involved in membership in the city. So having him on, I think, was great. And it brings up a very important point, which is it's just about rallying the people that want that program. And I know that I'm more than happy to be a part of helping to do so. And whatever he's going to do, whatever we can do, and you as listeners, whatever you could do, when that petition comes up, please sign it. And if you have a chance to get out and stand out there, because we're coming out of COVID, if it's something that we have to do publicly, our kids are too important. And programs like this are just too important to just let them slip through our fingers. And maybe, you know, I heard, you know, what you said about Tastani. And sometimes people can think that they're making the right move, but with something so long, with so much history and so much commitment, especially as an organization, it would be very, 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 very terrible to just to try to divide it up, because there's always going to be holes in that. You know,
absolutely. It's not going to be. It's not exactly. It's not going to be the cohesive whole program. Look, I keep saying this. If the program itself had been criticized and therefore that's why it fell away, well, that happens in life. I wouldn't be carrying on. But people have said that this program was a model for the rest of the state, that this was a well-run, beautiful program. And the shame that the Board of Ed, and it really begins with the Board of Ed, but also the superintendent, doesn't and didn't value it enough to say, we will find money for this because this has the intangible benefits. This has the modeling that Pastor McCullough was talking about. This has the Christmas presents and the caring and the reaching across racial lines one family at a time. And there just doesn't seem to be any evaluation of that. Wayne, we have a caller who wants to talk about this, Elaine from Stratford. Hi, Elaine. You're on with Wayne Winston and myself. Good morning.
Good morning, Lisa. I'm enjoying your program every day. You bring in a lot of interesting topics. I'm not sure if I'm off in the left field on this one, but one way I'm looking at this, we have a wonderful program for the young people, and I agree with everything everyone is saying. My question is, are they trying to get rid of the influence of good volunteers so they can teach the way they want and they're going to select? We have a lot of problems in the schools in different states that they're teaching our children things we don't want taught to our children. So when they get rid of people, is it the program or really is it the people, because these are good people and they don't want them because it's not what they want to teach the children?
Well, I can tell you something, Elaine. You're now the fourth person to speculate that maybe there's something else going on, another agenda. And I sincerely do not want to believe that. But and we know from this show that there have been black volunteers and white volunteers. There have been volunteers from Bridgeport and every single community around Fairfield County that want to help these children. They are apolitical in nature. They are simply coming in to teach basic reading and math and loving of writing skills to our kids.
And what we need so desperately, because, you know, we don't have the extra teachers in the classroom.
Correct.
Especially in the lower grade.
Let me ask Wayne to speculate. Thank you, Elaine, for your call. I appreciate it. Wayne, do you think there's something else going on here? Do you think that for whatever reason, there has been a reluctance on behalf of the powers that be that run Board of Ed schools, that it wasn't that important to them to make it easy for volunteers to come and see what was going on in the schools. What do you think?
You know, it's a difficult call. And, you know, I like to do things if I have some solid ground to stand on. And, you know, is it possible? It's possible. I haven't seen or heard anything that points that out specifically. The outcome can be that it disenfranchises all of these people who are already bought into a program. And for any organization, getting people who are committed is extremely important. And each administration is different. You know, they make a move here and make a move there. I hope through this program and what will happen next that they will make a different decision, because it's clear that it was effective. And anytime you get people passionate about educating our kids and they're coming from other communities, isn't that what you really want? So I scratch my head as well in saying, is this just one of those wacky, crazy decisions that someone thinks is a good idea, and whatever 5 or 10 other organizations, I don't know how many there are, that they somehow can divvy this up and have the same effect? That would remain to be seen. And I'm like, if it's not broke, why fix it, especially with a small amount of money in the budget, you know, that it would take to really run this thing? Because clearly they're getting millions of dollars.
Millions.
Millions out of these people as volunteers. So that's the hard part, you know, for me. And I hope, you know, sometimes, you know, we see people change and go, hey, listen, we might have missed this. Maybe you guys are right. Doesn't mean they can't do other things with those other programs, because God knows we never have enough. But why fix the one that's not broke?
Yeah, exactly. And that's why it's a head scratcher. And, you know, whenever you can't figure out a logical cause and effect, it will lead people to say, understandably, maybe I'm missing something. Maybe there is an ulterior agenda. Maybe there is something else going on. I agree with you. I don't have any evidence to support it, but on its face, it doesn't make sense about the lack of support, the lack of institutional support. And that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about a Board of Ed that turned its back on it, except for the lone dissenting voice of Maria Pereira, who was on our show. She says she was the only person at the board to disagree with the vote to defund this back in 1819. Then you have a program that is straggling on fumes, but raising money from the private sector to go forward for 2 whole years. And then with COVID, I mean, we've got so many other things to worry about during COVID. It was very easy for the school to think that this program was going to go away quietly. And all of a sudden, as you heard Pastor McCullough said, he gets this surprising letter. This all started with me having a friend who got this shocking letter. And the letter was, hey, we're done. And they're like, you've got to be kidding me. So I don't know, Wayne.
Well, I'm assuming that by the time, you know, we're finished here and the voices in the community, and this is what's great about America, when something is not quite right or something's valuable, we can use our constitutional right to move forward and say, we really want this, we really need it, and I hope we can win this one. And I think we can if enough people get out there to do what needs to be done to figure it out.
Okay, Wayne Winston, let's talk a little bit. There was a story I wanted to bring up, 203-333-9422. We talk about racial issues every week on the show. And there was a story that I sent you. Of course, I can't find it right here. But it was a story about the new London police chief and how, and the reason I bring it up is because he was originally a New Haven police officer, and he's actually blaming his being passed over in New Haven on the fact that he was white. And let's see, the city's former police chief of New London abruptly retired when he was confronted in May about a secretly recorded conversation that included comments about him allegedly getting passed over for promotions because he is white, according to the mayor, who says the mayor is very disappointed that this conversation came to light. When the conversation came to light, Peter Richard retired as New London's police chief on May 27th. And Mayor Michael Passero said he showed him an email containing excerpts of the conversation. In the recording, Passero said Reichard claimed, he spells his name R-E-I-C-H-A-R-D, maybe Reichard, claimed he faced discrimination that prevented him from promotions when he was with the New Haven Police Department, saying, quote, I've been passed over and was better qualified than people, and the only reason I got passed over was because I was white. Twice I got passed over for sergeant because I was white, until they got to a point that they had no choice. They promoted all the minority officers until they got to the three white guys at the top. And when that conversation came to light, it was basically so embarrassing to him and the mayor that he decided that he would retire. So, I mean, we can talk about this from a lot of different angles, including the fact that he was clearly speaking in what he thought was a private conversation, which was not intended to have hit the light of day. And he's entitled, in my view, Wayne, to have his personal beliefs about why he was passed over without necessarily being punished for that. What do you think about that? You think that he's entitled to believe that? And or do you think that in believing that, it compromises his ability to be a police officer? We can argue it one way or the other. What do you think?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, if you feel that the people of color, and I don't know if they were black or Latino, the people of color, if they surpassed you or you were, quote, passed over, then it couldn't be because they were more qualified. You know, he's like, well, it's because of their race. So you're basically saying that your system is going to give them the job, which has been the historic argument throughout history, you know, that you only give the black person job because you need a black person in that position. And if there's if that's the case, and you've got two that were promoted ahead of you, now I don't know what his record is, and then you've got a third one, sounds like, and you've been passed over, maybe they're just more qualified. And when you say things from a personal standpoint of what your thoughts are, I mean, I get it. You don't expect someone to hear it, but it also says something about that, too, because it says that you can't see these people just for the talent that they may have. And you're blaming the system that says this is why they got promoted, because clearly it couldn't be because they were more qualified or there was something about them, work performance or something that they did. And that's what we're struggling with here in this country, that simple mindset. And, you know,
I think you raise a good point. I think you raise a good point. I also think the reason it's particularly, fraught here is because unlike other professions, which don't require you to constantly deal with the general public, if you're the mayor of a town and you find out that your police chief blamed his lack of promotion on his race, you would then say to yourself, well, is he going to take it out on other members of color of my community because he resents the way he was treated as a white person? And then that would cause you to be nervous about the average encounter with someone on the street, the stranger. And that's, I think, another thing that would play into a mayor's state of mind.
And you're absolutely right, because, you know, lens-wise, it's not a good lens for the administration because, hey, look, I picked you. You know, these are some of those, you know, triggers, some of these below-the-surface racist psychology we're talking about, because what happens when he sees a black person or a black child or a black woman or a black man, if you're thinking they're not equal to you, then that has an effect on your judgment, whether you fear for your life or when you're having a traffic stop or any of these types of things, which, again, is what we're trying to sort out now, you know, to not make that prejudgment. So obviously it's how he feels, and I think he quit because he realized, you know, it was going to be hard to be in that position anyway, because once it hit, he would have to deal with that in some way, shape, or form, even though it's his private life. Plus, you have to trust law enforcement. Nobody's perfect. God knows we get that. But that whole thing that could make you make that decision is what we're trying to address in America right now. How do we not have a white police officer make that snap decision? And if you know these officers, you work with them, and you can't see somehow that they were qualified to get an appointment ahead of you, then that says a lot. And, you know, if they're white officers, would you have thought the same thing? You know, oh, he's just more qualified.
All right, we're going to be right back. We're chatting with Wayne Winston. We're talking about stories that intersect with race and the similarities and differences and conflicts that come about. You're welcome to be part of the conversation. 203-333-9422. Also keeping alive the story of the canceled school volunteer program for Bridgeport Public Schools. If you've got any insight on that, we'd love to hear from you as well. 203-333-9422.
A conversation on race in Connecticut. Lisa Wexler talks to Bridgeport civic activist Wayne Winston. Now on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600.
By the way, Wayne Winston, nice poster, which I posted on Instagram and Facebook this morning. Very nice job. Who did that graphic design for you?
Well, I got to tell you, I am a tech guy, so within my skill set, I do put some things together. And I came up with an idea, and I said, you know, this is such a great show, and I appreciate being on it and being able to serve the community and share some thoughts. I get people actually that stop me, that listen, that know who I am, and they really enjoy the show because a lot of people don't call in. But I'm okay with that. And I had one guy who was a little bit like, boy, you're always on there stirring it up, you know. And I'm like, well, you know, the world is stirred up right now. And that's what we're trying to do, not have it boil over, you know, and have
that's,
a great conversation.
Yeah, I like that. That's a really good analogy. We're stirring it up so it doesn't boil over. That's right. We're cooking the risotto, right? We're keeping it stirred so it doesn't get icky and sticky and gross or just go all the way up, right? And it doesn't
Absolutely.
Stick to the ceiling. Right. Keeping the risotto going. I like that. That's a good analogy. I really like that. Stirring the pot so we don't have it boil over. Well, anyway, I want you to tell our audience as we wrap up a little bit, what is going on tonight? I understand you're having Congressman Himes join you for something. What's happening?
Yes, every other week, we start out with an anti-racism Zoom during the COVID with the things with George Floyd. And America's going through such a change. And that's what I'm proud about right now, because we're addressing a lot of the things that were wrong and fixing these things with race. And Congressman Himes has been very anti-racist from the beginning. And he's done some great things for our city. And often we don't get to talk to our legislators a lot. But our agenda is to share the information and pick topics that are happening right now, you know, about the AMA declaring that the racism is a health emergency and so on. And so having this anti-racism format and agenda gives people a chance to talk about some of those things that we talk about here, but you can actually see them and discuss these questions yourself very readily at the press of a button. So he's going to share what's going on in Congress and some of the things that he's trying to do to fight anti-racism legislation. And we really need an anti-racist agenda. And Lisa, I sent you a video of a guy named Richard Spencer, and I want you listeners to Wikipedia him, you know, look him up online and find out who this guy is. He is the creator of the alt-right movement, and we're going to touch on him tonight. And he's a young guy. He's kind of guarantees that what happened in 2017 with the torches and all that is alive and well, and he's interviewed by Charles Barkley on TNT on a show I believe that is canceled now, Race in America. And you'll see how he deals with Charles Barkley. He truly believes the separation of race. And when it comes to gays and so on, they don't want people of color mixing with their families. And he's a young guy. And he was very much connected to the last administration. So that's what I'm saying. We are in this to make it a better world for everyone. But you have to deal with the people who are out there that are trying to take us backwards and tear us down.
I saw the whole 7-8 minute video. It was riveting and disgusting at the same time because, you know, you might as well just put a cone and a hood over his head. I mean, he just, you know, that's who he is. And he enjoyed, I think, the provocation of espousing his very nasty views. But you could see the blood drain out of his face when Charles Barkley was accompanied by another black man. I don't remember his name, who said, well, you know, the chances are your grandchildren are going to have some color in them, or they're going to be brown or something like that. And you could, did you see that part? And you could see the blood just drain from his face. He didn't know how to handle that. And Charles Barkley was so, I think he was so astonished and flummoxed and just truly shocked to the core to hear in this day and age, somebody espouse such ugliness from their lips, you know, like, Come sit down. I'm so excited to meet you. The great Charles Barkley shakes his hand. Wow, I'm in the same room with the great athlete Charles Barkley. But by the way, no offense, you belong in Africa, okay? No offense, but this is our country. It's a country for only white people. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, some Jews that are also at the board table were no good. You notice he had to throw in a knock against Jews, but whatever.
Oh,
I'm
absolutely
used to that. I know. Wayne Winston, thanks so much for being on the show. Paul Pacelli up from 2 to 6. You can find us on SoundCloud. Don't miss any part of the Lisa Wexler Show and podcasts on WICC600.com.